Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome everybody, Eddie Trunk here with you, and it's time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Hope you all had a great week, and thanks for joining me for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. As I have just made my way back from, well, as usual, a trip somewhere. I'm always going somewhere, it seems like, and this time around, just came back from a little recreation. I went down to South Florida and spent some time down there, and then over to Tulsa, started in Hollywood, Florida at the Seminole Hard Rock, where I always have a great time, great facility, a facility that is under some renovation right now. They're actually building a whole new area in the back that's going to be this massive sort of mall and brand new hotel tower, beautiful place down there in Hollywood, Florida at the Seminole Hard Rock. So stayed there for a few days, of course, caught up with some friends and my good friend Mike Piazza, former MLB player, Hall of Famer, got to have dinner with him and spend some time with him. Don't get to see him as much anymore now that he's retired. Used to do my radio show all the time, but he's retired, living down in South Florida. But spent a good couple days with him, catching up a little, and just a good time down there in South Florida. And then went over to Tulsa, where this past Sunday I hosted a show at the IDL Ballroom that had Warrant and Firehouse. Good show, good turnout for a Sunday night. Always a great time there in Oklahoma and in the Tulsa area where I have so many friends now and have been so many times. And it was a great, great time. My thanks to promoter Doug Burgess and his company DEB Concerts for having me out to host. I'll be back out there again December 1st, hosting a show with Lita Ford and Jack Russell's Great White. So if you're in the Tulsa area, be coming back your way again very, very soon. Looking forward to that as always. So that was good, man. It was a good 7-8 days away on the road. Came back, got back into the swing of things. And now, as you're hearing this, in a matter of hours, I'm getting ready to fly to New Orleans, where I have not been to New Orleans in 30 years. And I'm going there because this weekend is a big music festival called Voodoo Fest. Not a lot at Voodoo Fest, to be honest with you, for rock fans, a smattering of rock bands, the biggest of which being Prophets of Rage and also Foo Fighters. So they've got a couple big rock bands there, but it's not all rock. It's a very eclectic mix of music. But I hear it's an amazing event. Halloween weekend in New Orleans should be quite a trip. And I will be there shooting an episode of this TV show that I've been teasing with you guys for a while that will formally be announced very, very soon. They held off on the press release, but it is coming soon, and it'll start premiering and airing next year. But clearly, as you figured out now, this being the fourth episode I'm taping, we are doing shows from music festivals, and Voodoo Fest being the latest one. So if you're in New Orleans, I'll be there this coming weekend. I don't know how much of my audience, quite frankly, is interested in the lineup that's at Voodoo Fest, but should you find yourself there, I don't think I'll be in costume, but I'll be there walking around. And you'll see me with the camera crew, so you'll be easy to find me. So that's where things are at. That's the latest. That's what's been happening in my week in the last week. There's been so much going on in the world of music. A lot of cool stuff that's been sent to me. The first two Montrose albums have come out in special editions. Been loving listening to them. The new Sons of Apollo record is finally out. Enjoying that. I just got a tremendous book. As you know, I'm a Kiss fan, and I'm going to be appearing at the Atlanta Kiss Expo on January 20th. And Lynn Goldsmith, the noted photographer, has released a Kiss book of her photography from 77 to 80. Some amazing stuff. The book is put together incredibly well. Really been enjoying that. I'm going to be having Lynn on my SiriusXM volume show, actually, this coming Monday in the studio to discuss this book. Got my Rock and Roll Hall of Fame ballot. It's amazing to me how many people do not know the difference between the nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and those being inducted. I can't tell you how many people have said to me, oh, hey, Eddie, man, finally Priest is in. Finally Bon Jovi is in. They are just nominated, folks. They are not inducted. Now it goes into the hands of the voters, which I am one of. We cast our votes, and that determines who actually goes in. The fan voting, not surprisingly, at the time I'm doing this podcast, which is October 24th, the fan voting is being led by a fairly wide margin by Bon Jovi fans. In the number two spot would be the Moody Blues, which I found the Moody Blues surprising. I did not find Bon Jovi surprising. Whether you like the band or not, they have a huge global following. Very important, though, to always tell people the fan voting really, really, really doesn't matter in the end. All of the fan votes, whoever wins, just counts for one extra vote for that artist. So it's not a huge swing. Fan voting alone cannot put someone in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Certainly doesn't hurt. But it does not, it's extremely rare and unlikely that that would actually be the determining factor. But still, cool to see. And we'll continue to track that. I'm going to do the same thing with my ballot that I did last year for my voting. And I'll do it on the air on my volume show and let you guys help me fill it out. So if you listen to me each and every day on SiriusXM Channel 106 Volume, you can hear me doing a rock talk show Monday through Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, or you can grab those on demand each day as well. You can engage in the conversation with me if you listen during the live window. Most of the interviews you hear here on the Eddie Trunk podcast originated on my show, which is called Trunk Nation on SiriusXM 106 Volume. So, speaking of interviews and speaking of this podcast, this week, my guest is, I just mentioned his band Prophets of Rage, Tom Morello. I did my volume show from LA a few weeks ago. Tom was nice enough to drop by. We had a good conversation. Tom has become a good friend over the years. When I go to LA, we sit around, we talk, we get together, we have some drinks, we love talking music. I've known Tom for a while now, and like I said, we are friends, but we never ever get into any other talk but talk about music, which is the case on this podcast that you're about to hear as well. I know that Tom is an activist and has very strong feelings and strong messages in the things that he does, and that's all well and good, but my world is music, and that's what we always talk about, and Tom is a huge music fan and especially a huge rock and metal fan. So good conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it. A lot of people actually heard about this interview happening on my volume show when it aired live and missed it or didn't have SiriusXM and said, hey, we'd love to hear the Morello interview. Can you get that up? So wanted to fast track that a little bit and get it on for you this week. Like I tell you guys all the time, all of these interviews I do, many of which make big news. I mean, I'm doing 6 live shows a week for SiriusXM, so I can only put one a week here on the podcast. So there's 4 or 5 a week that you're missing if you don't get SiriusXM and the volume channel, which is 106. I hope if you don't, you will join me and come on over and interact and get involved live. But I'll bring you the best of them here each and every week when I can on the podcast, as I will this week with Tom Morello. Also want to remind you that I've got an Amazon storefront. Please have a look at it. It's pretty cool. If you go to amazon.com/shop/EddieTrunk, you'll see items I've hand-selected to be in my Amazon storefront. You can go there and you can pick and buy some of the items that I personally selected to put in my store. Or if you don't want to, that's fine too. You just go on and shop to other areas of the Amazon site from my page. But please start on my page, amazon.com/shop/EddieTrunk, and take a look at some of the things that I talk about on this book, on this podcast, like that book that I just mentioned, the Lynn Goldsmith Kiss book. I put that up there on my store. amazon.com/shop/EddieTrunk. Start there. Go to Amazon from there each and every time. That would be greatly appreciated. Like I said, the Morello interview I have for you this week, I hope you guys enjoy it. It's a lot of fun. We talk about all sorts of stuff, including Tom's current band, Prophets of Rage, and of course, some old school stuff in the world of rock music as well that we are both so passionate about. Got a lot of upcoming appearances. As I mentioned, they are on my website, eddietrunk.com. I urge you to check that. Trunk Report is my blog. Music news updated daily on my site as well. And like I mentioned, the social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, where I'm most active, Instagram and Facebook. Upcoming appearances include Houston area, Brookshire to be exact, Parfest, November 11th with Don Dokken. Back in Tulsa, December 1st, IDL Ballroom with Lita Ford and Jack Russell's Great White. The Bomb Factory in Dallas for the Metal Holiday Special, headlined by Ace Frehley, December 16th. And at the Atlanta Marriott for the Atlanta Kiss Convention on January 20th. Take a look. All the information, links to buy tickets are all on the homepage of eddietrunk.com. All right, and when you're there, go to ET's box office. You can enter to win tickets to a lot of cool shows, most of which are in the New York City area. They include A Perfect Circle at Barclays Center in Brooklyn, November 2nd. Lynch Mob, B.B. King's in New York. Skid Row, November 18th. Gramercy. Also coming up, Skid Row at the Starland Ballroom. November 8th is the Gramercy show. More shows as well. My buddy Jason Buehler of Saigon Kick doing a solo show in New York City, American Beauty. That's happening on December 8th. Alice Cooper dates coming up. Have a look on eddietrunk.com. Coming right back with Tom Morello, my guest on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, if you're looking to buy a car, what do you want? Well, you want to make sure that you're getting real pricing on actual inventory, don't you? Unfortunately, a lot of times this just isn't the case. People tend to configure cars online. Only later they find out that they're not actually available. Well, with TrueCar, you get real pricing on actual inventory. It's not pricing offered by TrueCar, but pricing from an actual dealer. And not just any dealer, but a TrueCar certified dealer. It's a carefully curated network of dealers committed to transparency and offering you a competitive market price. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. Then TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the same car you're looking for, and now you know what a fair price is so you can feel confident. Over 3 million cars have been sold to TrueCar users by the TrueCar Certified Dealer Network. So over 13,000 TrueCar certified dealers nationwide, and you'll work directly with a TrueCar certified dealer contact. TrueCar users, well, they're more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. And TrueCar users, well, they save an average of over $3,000, yes, $3,000 off MSRP. So when you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
The Serial Killer Podcast, hosted by me, Thomas Vaberg Thune, is the podcast dedicated to serial killers, who they were, what they did, and how. Join me as I sit down bi-weekly to bring you, dear listener, into the dark land of serial murder and psychopathy. The show goes into graphic detail on the most infamous and lesser-known serial killers from around the world, with each episode covering one unique serial killer. So far, the show has covered serial killer superstars, such as BTK, Jeffrey Dahmer, and the Yorkshire Ripper, and lesser-known killers, such as Elias Abuelazam and Anatoly Onoprienko. Be advised, this show is not for children, as it takes you deep into the twisted world of ultimate evil. You can find me exclusively at podcastone.com or on the new Podcast One app. Also, don't forget to rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, we're back with the Eddie Trunk Podcast and my guest this week. And again, this interview, like most of the interviews, come from my SiriusXM show on Volume. This is a recent visit and a recent hang that I had on my Volume show, Trunk Nation, on SiriusXM 106 with Rage Against the Machine, Audio Slave, Prophets of Rage guitarist Tom Morello. Enjoy this, everybody. And now I welcome in a man that I was drinking some whiskey with him on Saturday night in Louisville, my good friend, Mr. Tom Morello.
I won't deny it. Hello, how are you?
That was some good stuff we were drinking.
It was a nice time. Yeah,
I actually took a note for what that was because I want to have it when we.
It was a fine kind of metal gathering there.
Do you think the Rainbow sells that stuff we were drinking?
I guarantee you it does not. It's a 100% certainty it does not.
You know
not.
That was 114 proof?
I know. That was Kentucky. No, it was in Louisville, Kentucky.
No games there. Games. So how did your show go? Because I couldn't stay for the show.
You were there for like the Aussie night. No, it was great. We headlined the next night at Louder Than Life Festival. And it was awesome. It was a, ton of people. We played with Incubus and Rise Against open up, and they're great bands. We had an awesome, and Stone Sour as well. It was a super great bill. Prophets of Rage out there rocking it.
What do you make of all these festivals, man? There's so many of them now, and now that you're pretty active with them, with Prophets of Rage, because you're out there playing them. I mean, you think it's a good thing, right?
I love it. I mean, I could care, frankly, could care less, kind of from a business standpoint. Like the whether it was Rage or Audio Slave or Prophets of Rage, it's music that's built for a big space, and there's nothing like that feeling of looking out of that ocean of people going absolutely crazy. So the more festivals, the better for me.
You mentioned I never actually asked you this. I haven't seen Prophets of Rage live yet, but do you do any Audio Slave in the show?
We do like a tribute to Chris. We play Like a Stone and let the audience sing it with kind of like the empty microphone in the middle, and it's a way to kind of both publicly mourn and celebrate the great Chris Cornell.
Yeah, and I read some stuff from you saying that you and Chris, before his death, had some conversations about doing more Audio Slave.
Sure. Audio Slave took 12 years off, and the last time we played, the only time we played in 12 years, was in January at the anti-inaugural ball here in L.A., and we played three songs, and it was so great to see him, and it was so great to play with him, and afterward, literally his last words to me, I had such a great time, let's do that again, let's figure it out, and I was like, I'm down, so we're going to try to figure it out.
Were you guys in regular contact much?
Yeah. We had taken some time off, but I had played like a Night Watchman show with him in Seattle, and we were great friends, and it's a real shame.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, the amount of people who have celebrated him, even Guns N' Roses has been doing Black Hole Sun. Amazing to see.
He's a very, very, very important person in the history of rock and roll music. And in my view, Chris Cornell redeemed hard rock. I mean, I grew up on hard rock, and I loved the metal riffage and whatnot, but I couldn't always get behind the lyrical content, whether it was about kind of like misogynist lyrics, sexist lyrics, or whether it was about devil lyrics. I never connected with that. What Soundgarden did, along with Jane's Addiction and Living Color, I think those are the three bands that took all of the aggression and heaviness and power that I loved from Kiss to AC/DC and Motley Crue, and they had a deeper, poetic, like smarter content to the lyrics that made me connect with it more. And Chris, I think, is almost singularly responsible for that.
Yeah.
In addition to his beautiful hair and great voice and rock godness,
his rocky enormity of greatness. Mm-hmm. Living Color just opened for you guys at the Apollo.
Yeah,
right?
They did. Yeah, it was great. I mean, that was super fun. I mean, we've known those guys for some time. They actually took Rage Against the Machine out on tour in '94 or something like that.
Really?
So we've been friends for a while. It was great to play with them.
And they have a great record out, by the way, called Shade. I was texted Vernon about it because they're in England now. I think they're out overseas, but they for people who haven't checked out this new Living Color album, it is killer. It's really, really good record.
Great band, great players. Good dudes.
As I was saying the other day when we were talking, obviously Vernon and Corey are the guys up front, but man, that rhythm section is unbelievable.
Sure, yeah. I mean, they're really like deeply talented players in both sort of metal, jazz, and whatnot, and they have got a lot of skills.
And, you know, you a second ago, you mentioned Jane's Addiction, and the last couple of times I was here doing the show from L.A., Navarro was in with
sure,
me.
Sure, yeah.
And I think I'd mentioned, because we went out one night, and yeah. You said to me, who'd you have on the show? And I said, Navarro. And you said, you started telling me how important Jane's Addiction was
absolutely.
To you.
Absolutely.
Talk about that a little bit,
because
you had just moved here, right?
Yeah, I moved to Hollywood in 1986, and it was the height of kind of like the hair metal craziness. And, you know, and I came out here with a, you know, suitcase filled with spandex and shirts with zippers and, you know, like leather bracelets. And but I didn't, you know,
were
I didn't
rocking long hair then.
I had like the first I had the full on Jerry curl, like the Rick James. I was trying like in my black body was trying to be like as David Lee Roth, like Tony McAlpine was like the only like vantage point that you could look at. Like,
wait, what about Sound Barrier? Your boys,
Sound Barrier. Yeah, they had like they froed it up. I was aiming more crew than I was that. Yeah, and it didn't work out. The hair didn't work out great for me. So anyway, I was unable to, you know, sort of connect with the local rock and metal scene because I didn't look the part. I just didn't look the. Frankly, it's just because I didn't look the part. I would call up these ads in the paper and, you know, talk with the bass player on the phone. He's like, "Oh, we have some of the same influences, you know, greats." And I, you know, check out their ads, and I'm like, "Oh, this may be a little too glam for me." But, you know, I'm just trying to find my way in the music world. Then the manager would call up and just straight to the point. We've got a lot of interest from you know, agencies and whatnot. How long is your hair? I'm like, "Well, my hair's not that long." He's like, "Well, we're not really. There's an image thing. We're looking for a particular thing. Like, you haven't even heard me play. Like, you don't." Like, I could be Jimi Hendrix, and you wouldn't know because you're not going to have me down. He's like, "Would you wear a wig?" I'm like, "I'm not going to wear a friggin' wig." Really, that's a true story. Would you wear a wig? I'm like, "I'm not going to wear a wig, and I'm also not going to be in your band." So Jane's Addiction saved the scene here in Los Angeles. It was divided along, like, La Cienega Boulevard, and everything to the west of La Cienega was the hair metal Sunset Strip business.
And Gazzari's and all that.
And to the east were bands that I had never heard about before I moved here. It was Fishbone and, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers just kind of graduated from that scene. And it was a band called Jane's Addiction. And when I got a hold of a bootleg cassette of theirs, it changed my life in the same way that the Sex Pistols did, in the same way that Zeppelin did. I couldn't believe that there was a band that had that kind of heaviness and riff rock power with beautiful, poetic, deep lyrics. And it was like kind of, they were like a punk rock Led Zeppelin in a way. They had sort of the acoustic, the light, the light and the shade, and one of my favorite bands of all time.
So that made the mark on before you came though from to move from Chicago to LA.
Yeah.
Were you playing in bands in Chicago?
No, I was at Harvard. I was at going to Harvard.
Oh.
I was going to school in Boston.
Did you have a band on the side or anything?
No, I played in like cover bands at Harvard. Like I was in these Ivy League kegger bands, you know, playing Prince cover songs and whatnot for keggers.
Right. Interesting.
But then I would sneak Ozzy into the set. And these were like, I mean, man, it's like, you know, you're playing like a gig at, you know, the Harvard Science Center keg part. You can imagine like how wild that gets. And I'm literally wearing striped spandex, one stripe leopard print, one stripe black, with a bandana tied around my thigh, playing Randy Rhoads licks to the befuddled, you know, science majors.
Was there any other metal fans in Harvard?
You know what I found? You know, like a lot of times at college, they have there'll be, you know, the French table or the physics table where you get together regularly with people and speak French. We had the headbangers table. No,
really?
No kidding. And found enough dudes, and we would go down to Kenmore Square and check out local bands. There was a local band that was our favorite called Extreme, who was a baby band playing
wow.
in Boston with a 16-year-old Nuno Bettencourt, who was at the time like the best guitar player in the world.
Wow. So you saw the early extreme crazy club shows.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because those are legend.
Absolutely. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I really couldn't believe it. There was this high school kid who was, you know, I was a fan of Yngwie and Steve Vai and this and that. And I was like, this high school kid's as good as any of those dudes.
And what's crazy is if you go see Extreme today, they're still that good.
Yeah, they really
are still that good. The same energy, the same vocals and the harmonies. Nuno is still a beast. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Tell me about the evolution of Prophets of Rage.
Sure.
Because you and I hang out, and you met when I come out here, and you'd mentioned it to me kind of a little bit
in passing, once
when we were drinking or whatever. And you're like, I'm putting something together. But then it just kind of hit. It seemed like it just kind of showed up.
Right. So, I mean, first of all, I find all the time people may not even know what it is. Prophets of Rage is a band that I'm in with Timmy and Brad from Rage Against the Machine, Chuck D from Public Enemy, and DJ Lord from Public Enemy, and B-Real from Cypress Hill. That's six dudes in one band that, you know, from Rage, PE, and Cypress. And we
Who was the guy who called made the initial call?
I was watching this was during the election cycle in 2016, and I just thought that there was such craziness, and it felt like the world was going off the rails. And it was specifically, I saw a news headline that said Donald Trump rages against the machine. I said, oh hell no. Like, you
where was that? Was that in print or on TV?
On TV. It was like maybe CNN or something like that. Uh-huh. And I just thought, you don't get that. Like, that's not what we had in mind. So I very furiously tweeted about it. And then I thought to myself, this is not it's not enough to hashtag about what's going on in the world right now. We need to bring out the big guns. So I called Tim and Brad, and I said, basically, it's kind of like the close friends who rock great, who have an interest in making the world a more decent and just place. And those are the hands that went up. It was Tim and Brad, and first Chuck, and then B-Real.
And everybody said, we're in.
Everybody said, we're in.
Because when you do something like this, I mean, obviously, Tim and Brad, you have a great history with, mm-hmm. with both Audioslave and Rage Against mm-hmm. the Machine. So that's, I imagine that's like a brotherhood bond that has been there. But when you put something like this together, I mean, you're dealing, did you know Chuck and B-Real well?
Yeah, I mean, B-Real, it was in the first ever Rage Against the Machine video for Killing in the Name in 1992. He's in the video. He was at the show.
Oh, wow.
And Cypress took us out in 94 as well. Rage opened up for Cypress. Public Enemy was the first group to ever take Rage Against the Machine on tour. We did like a college tour in the early 90s. And so we've been friends and musical comrades of those guys for a very, very long time. And it was Public Enemy and Cypress Hill that were the two principal hip-hop influences on Rage Against the Machine. So we have a long history of both, like, respect for them as artists and personal friendship. And they were the ones that they're like, we're down, let's do this. So we rehearsed in deep for months. Okay, first of all, like, if you're a fan of any of those bands, you might think, oh, that looks great on paper. Well, something looking great on paper and something sounding great on stage are two very, very different things.
Sure.
So we got in a room completely locked down in secret for months deep in the valley to, like, see if this can work. Like, how does this group play Rage Against the Machine songs? How does this group rageify Public Enemy and Cypress Hill tunes? Can this group write songs together? And then the unveiling was, I think it was May 31st, 2016, The Whiskey. We went on K-Rock that morning and just said, we're a band. It's these dudes. We're playing tonight at The Whiskey. And a couple days later, played the Palladium. And a couple days later, announced a U.S. tour.
So you built it very much like you just kind of like put these seeds in place. You played these small shows.
Yeah.
And then did you do that because you were wondering, you wanted to feel it out and make sure it felt right?
No.
We wanted to take a full plunge?
We had kind of the whole thing locked in. And we didn't just play small shows. I mean, the first eight shows we played, we gave away 100% of the proceeds to homeless shelters and food banks in the cities. The third show we played was on Skid Row in Los Angeles. We played at a prison in Southern California at Norco. We played at the protest at the RNC. So we wanted it to be, it's not like, hey, here's a super group and we're coming to capitalize on festival season. It had nothing to do with that. It came together for like this, what was going on in the country.
And for people who haven't seen the band live yet, like me, you're doing stuff from everybody's respective bands, right?
That's correct.
As well as a new record you just put out.
Yeah, we just put out a new record. I mean, here's the thing. Like, we're a brand new band in some ways, but we've played in front of 2.5 million people in the year and a half we've been together before our first record came out. So we've done three continents, you know, like fully rocking it out, and then we made a record. We went in with Brendan O'Brien to make this album. And, you know, Brendan, who's done some of my favorite records by other people and some of my favorite records by me and my friends, and it's been awesome. I mean, now we've got, you know, a year and a half in, we've already played in front of over 2 million people, and we've got a record out that we love.
Brendan O'Brien did the Stone Temple Pilots record.
Sure, he did.
He did.
He engineered like the Black Crowes and Chili Peppers records. Did the STP records. He did Rage, Evil Empire, and Battle of Los Angeles.
Right.
Did the Audioslave record.
The reason why I bring up the STP record though is because those guys were here yesterday and they just did something where they went into Henson and put up all the tracks for Core for the first record with Brendan O'Brien.
Yeah.
And I don't know Brendan O'Brien, but mm-hmm. they were showing me excerpts of the video that's documentary sort of deal they're doing, and he was just cracking them up like he was a real jokester.
He's a comedian, man. That's, I mean, he's a great producer, but he's a better comic.
That's what they were saying. And they were just like, he's a real character.
Yeah.
I definitely got to get, I love interviewing producers. I got to get him on the show. I'd love
he's
to do something.
He's a little press shy, I'll tell
oh,
you.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Is he a little mutt langish or not?
He's
that
not
bad?
Trying to do interviews, but he's a great hang. He's a great hang. Next time we're recording, I'll ask you down. You can sort of see the magic at work.
Yeah, I would like to, because I love getting those behind the scenes stories from guys.
But there's really no one, you know. Well, I've made records with a lot of people, but Brendan, he comes from an engineering background, and he's a great player. Like, if you make a record with Brendan, he's probably the best guitar player, bass player, drummer, and singer in your band.
You know? Oh, really?
And so he has that. He commands that kind of respect, but also his engineering. He engineered a lot of those great Rick Rubin records. You know,
right.
Where Rick is kind of like the guru, but Brendan's the one that makes them sound like that.
Right.
And so you just go in with a complete confidence that your record is going to sound fantastic. You just focus on capturing performances. With this record, too, like a lot of times records these days are laptop rock.
Right.
You know, where everybody emails files to
Pro Tools.
Exactly.
Whatever,
right. And no one's even in the same city when they're making a record.
Right.
This we made looking each other in the eye. You know, the whole band in the room with Brendan, and that's why, you know, this record, we want to make a record that stood shoulder to shoulder with some of our best work.
Were you kind of in a space where you wanted to be in a band again at the time that in other words, if Prophets of Rage wasn't driven to Assembly because of what was happening in the political world, were you coming, because up until Prophets of Rage, you were kind of doing a bunch of different things. You were doing solo shows, Night Watchmen. You were playing Bruce Springsteen. Some amazing stuff. Yeah. You played with Ozzy.
Yes.
People may not know you played some Ozzy shows.
Yes.
All amazing stuff. But were you at a point as a musician where you're like, I wouldn't mind having a band again?
I got to tell you, I was a little gun. You know, I've been in bands for a long time, you know, from high school. And I had kind of had worn out my kind of personal emotional welcome being in bands. This has been such a rejuvenating experience. I was like, we've got to do this because the times demand it. And then I found that I loved being in this band, that it was fun. It was collaborative. People's egos were left at the door. Cause it's a lot of people who have a lot of experience, have made a lot of records and a lot of hits, you know what I'm saying? And everybody was just like, we're just brothers in a band, let's rock it out. And it's so much fun. It has made me feel great about being in a band again.
Right. I mean, so because that's an important thing. You were kind of cool with being the
very
Tom Morello jumping around and
very
doing different
cool with
stuff.
That. Yeah, very
phone
cool.
Was ringing and doing a wide range of music.
Yeah, very cool with that. Yeah. I mean, it allows a kind of freedom and, you know, no band meetings. Which is if you're not in a band, you don't know what that is.
No,
band meetings are rough, dude. But honestly, like, so I was honestly a little gun shy when we went into this. I'm like, we need to do this. It's very important, but is it going to be okay? And we did the Make America Rage Again tour in 2016, and I had a ball. Like, I loved it. We had a great time before, during, and after shows together, and I couldn't wait. Then we finished that tour. You know, we'd played mostly sort of the catalog material during that tour. And afterwards, we were like, well, that chemistry felt great playing shows. We rocked a lot of people. Can we write a song? So we went in the studio, and I was a little trepidatious about that, too. And we went and we wrote 10 songs in 2 weeks. And it was low-hanging fruit, and I couldn't wait to get to rehearsal the next day to write the next jam.
A lot more to talk about with Tom Morello, and we'll let you call in as well and join in the conversation. When we come back, Tom, I want to talk to you a little bit about what I'm talking to everybody about, which is a couple things. First of all, the very sad loss of Tom Petty, which was announced yesterday, and get your take on that a little bit, get a little Tom Petty stuff from you. And also the just horrific scene from Vegas and what happened there and how that plays into what goes on with, you know, with music and playing live out there. We're all in these settings all the time, whether we're fans or players or working or whatever. So we'll touch on that a little bit and some other stuff with Tom, also on Prophets of Rage, and we'll let you call in as well. And I want to get something from you too before we run out of time on playing with Springsteen and playing with Ozzy.
Sure.
because that in and of itself, the fact that I just said
yes,
the same guy
yes.
playing guitar in Springsteen
yeah.
and Ozzy.
Yeah, how many guys do you have on your show that have played with like Wu-Tang Clan, Bruce Springsteen, and Ozzy Osbourne? I'm guessing not many.
and was a founder of Rage Against the Machine. Throw that on top.
It's a pretty rich resume.
Harvard would be proud.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with more with Tom Morello.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Bluehost, ladies and gentlemen, the top-rated website provider. They power over 2 million websites. So you could just be a blogger or a small business owner. Whatever it is, Bluehost has everything you need to build the website you've always wanted. Bluehost is the best tool to build, host, and manage your personal or small business website. They give you the freedom to design your website your way without being limited by templates. Bluehost makes hosting your website stress-free so you can get back to what matters most. Simple enough for beginners, powerful enough for even the most advanced users. Ultimate flexibility and control with fully customizable templates and third-party app support. True reliability. We're talking 99.9% uptime guarantee and automated updates. Maximum security, including malware monitoring and protection, and automatic secure WordPress installs. 24/7 tech support, online resources, and expert services to help you succeed and save time. Bluehost, they are the top recommended WordPress host on WordPress.org since 2005. Check this out, Eddie Trunk listeners. You can save 50% when you sign up at Bluehost.com/Eddie Trunk. Get your website humming, folks. Bluehost, Bluehost.com/Eddie Trunk for 50% off.
Hey there, I'm Victoria Shade, and I'm the host of PetMD's Life with Pets. Now, this is a fun, all-about-dogs-and-cats kind of show where I get to interview subject matter experts, answer some listener questions, and help you become a better pet parent along the way. Now, we've had some really amazing guests on the show, including My Two Cents host Bill Engvall, who told me all about his amazing dog, Jake, and Adam Carolla, who gave me a crash course in all things Phil. You can listen to PetMD's Life with Pets exclusively on Podcast One, the new Podcast One app, or Apple Podcasts. And guys, it would be a huge help if you could rate and review the show so other people can join the pack.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Back with more with Tom Morello on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast. Tell everybody this game.
Yeah.
This
it's a
is
great
awesome.
Play this with your. There's two games you can play like with your friends when you're hanging out. But one of the rules, like when we have like Monday Men's Metal Night, sometimes at the Rainbow, some other places. But the rule is like what is said at that table stays at that table because you want everybody to be really like honest. But sometimes you're talking about like your friend's band.
Did you ever watch Get Smart?
Yeah, it's like
the cone of silence should come down.
It's
over
a the total
table.
Cone of silence because you want to be able to fully enjoy like the honesty of talking, but without hurting anybody's.
What was those games?
There's two great games. One of them is called MVP Weak Link. So in this game, you pick any band in the history of rock, and everyone at the table has to identify who they believe is the most valuable player of that band and who's the weak link of that band. There's only one rule: you cannot abstain. You can't be like, "Oh, Zeppelin has no weak link, man." You have to name someone as the MVP and weak link. And that's it. And then you go around and you argue about it. Then the other, and it gets pretty ferocious sometimes.
A bunch of 50-year-old guys yelling at each other
because Richie Blackmore, this and that.
How dare you say Francis Buchholz is the weak link of Scorpions?
Exactly. It gets pretty heated. Then the other one is Mount Rushmore, where you take any topic, the worst guitarist in a popular metal band, and then you have to name the top four, the Mount Rushmore of best singers of all time, worst metal singles of all time, greatest hair, greatest pants in metal history, and it gets pretty interesting.
I'm gonna do the MVP weak link game on the air with the audience one of these days.
Oh, you should.
When I have a show with no guest, which happens sometimes, I'm gonna do it because I'll just let them do it.
Of course.
I'm not going to.
Of course.
They can take the bullets.
Exactly. Because the weak link part gets pretty,
brutal. It is brutal. I think they even turned. Well, the one rule, because outside of me, most of the time when we're together, it's like yourself and the others are musicians.
Yes.
So the one rule is you can't do your own band.
Right. You can't do your own band. Right. Yeah, because then you can't do your own band.
It's so bad. Yeah. You could, but you couldn't.
And then there are some bands, like, you know, but to me, it's clear. Sometimes the MVP and the weak link are the same person.
Ponder that.
Yeah.
On a more serious note, any experience or history with Tom Petty beyond being a fan?
Yeah, you know what? I didn't know Tom Petty, though. I was a fan. I remember, you know, growing up, Tom Petty was huge in Chicago. I mean, he was absolutely huge. And my tastes ran a little heavier than Tom Petty, but I always had a respect for. I loved like the jams like Refugee and Won't Back Down and the duet he did with Stevie Nicks. There was an honesty and authenticity to what he did, and also his story of how he in a lot of ways in the record industry raged against the machine. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a guy that had his own path, and they tried to kind of mold him this way and mold him that way, and he really was his own artist and a really like good guy. It's a tragic loss. I mean, he's one of the cornerstone staples of classic rock, and for four decades his music's been interwoven into, you know, American culture and the world's culture, and it's just a tragic loss.
Yeah, it is. It's and his tragic. Records sound sonically amazing too.
Yeah,
like just, even if you listen to Breakdown and the really early stuff,
that's a great jam.
It's so good. I mean, there's great just jam. So many songs, and obviously a tragic loss. You know, yesterday when I was doing this show and I came on the air, it was in the middle of news kind of getting out about Tom Petty and a lot of conflicting information about his status at the time that I was on the air.
Yes.
And of course, now we know he has indeed passed away. But the other big story as I signed on yesterday was what happened in Vegas.
Sure.
A city that I love and I've gone to so many times, and a place that I've actually, that end of the strip in Mandalay Bay, I have a good friend there that I've stayed there so many times. And I was yesterday when I was talking about this and just kind of sending my condolences out to now more than 50 people who died and over 500 injured.
Yeah.
Chuck D, who's now your bandmate and a loyal member of Trunk Nation,
yes,
I'm honored to say.
Yes, he loves you, dude.
and he called in. He called in on the request line, and we talked about this a little bit. And I said, I don't know if there's – when you've got somebody who is clearly a deranged guy, I don't know what could be done here.
Yeah, yeah.
In a city that's so wide open.
Yeah, he's a deranged guy who has access to, you know, automatic weapons, too. It's like he's not just the...
Right.
He's just deranged, you know. Everybody's... The initial inkling is, you know, which is natural and is right to send out, some, you know, thoughts and prayers to those. Because it's a tragedy.
Right.
And it makes you, as someone who plays music for a living, like... I was just thinking, like, nowhere safe. Like, literally nowhere is safe. But, you know, are we willing to examine how to make it more safe or not? You know, it's like the NRA's got politicians locked down, and you can't even discuss what might be ways to make deranged people keep them away from automatic weapons. Like, that's a taboo topic, you know?
Right. But the weapons, and I'm not 100% clear on this because I haven't heard enough, but the weapons he had, weren't most of them illegal?
I don't know.
They were illegal weapons
that he had access to.
But the question from a musical standpoint is, and I was just talking with Josh and Stevie from Buck Cherry, who were here before you, and I was posing this question to them. And Josh's attitude is, listen, because I said, prophets of rage, what you do, I mean, you're stirring the pot. You're a politically charged band.
Sure.
You're playing all over the world. And I asked those guys, they said they've had issues out there on the road with certain groups protesting them, lyrics or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
And their attitude is just like, you can do so much and then you just have to go live your life.
Exactly.
Where do you stand on that? You're on the road all the time.
The only place you're, you know, safe except from meteor strike is in your home. And I'm not going to be caged up in my, you know, for the rest of my life. It's always been a priority to like keep the audience as safe as possible, you know, fans and friends first. That's the way we look at it. and to make them as safe as possible. This day and age, like, that's, no one would even, I mean, it's, there's always like these new ways to harm people. But I mean, we're like, there's been so many mass shootings in the United States. You know, there's huge ones like the other day, and there's smaller ones regularly. It's like there's a pathology in this country and an access to, you know, guns that can shoot a lot, which is a really dangerous formula. And I don't know what the solution is to that, but at our shows we try to make it as safe as possible for everybody. But we're not going to stop, like, we're not going to end rock and roll,
right,
you know, because something like this happens.
Right,
you know?
Right, of course. Tell me about playing with Ozzy. I don't think a lot of people realize you played with Ozzy.
Yes,
you're rocking an Ozzy Randy
Rhodes shirt,
Randy
right
Rhodes
now,
T-shirt
baby.
Today. Your son's name is Rhodes.
That's
is
correct,
it not?
Named after Randy Rhodes, Rhodes. Yeah, my firstborn. Yeah,
and you had the distinction to play with Ozzy.
Played a few shows with Ozzy when he was doing those Ozzy and Friends shows, and you know, I got the call from Sharon, and she asked if, you know, I would be down to play a couple shows. I'm like, I will stop anything to do. I was, those records were so, both the Sabbath records and especially the first two Ozzy solo records were so formative to me as a lover of rock music and as a guitar player. Like, Randy Rhodes was the poster on my wall when I was practicing 8 hours a day. Like, that was for me the ideal, because he was, to me, I couldn't really relate so much to rock stars, but I could relate to musicians. And he was a person who was a dedicated musician, you know, and as, you know, your listeners may know, on days off on the Ozzy Osbourne tour, Randy would go take classical guitar lessons in shops around. So anyway, like, that really appealed to me. So the idea to be able to stand on stage and play Mr. Crowley with Ozzy Osbourne was just a dream come true.
When was the first time you heard Randy Rhodes? Was it with Ozzy, or Quiet Riot?
No, it was hearing Crazy Train on the loop in Chicago, and I was in a car with a bunch of my new wave friends, and they were like, oh, we arrived at the house, and I'm like, no one move, like, what is that riff? The first time I heard that Crazy Train riff, I lost my friggin' mind. And
you can say fucking on this show.
You can't. Okay. Oh, yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm protecting you from FCC fines.
It's serious XM.
I want you to be able to buy drinks at the Rainbow next time, man. So I don't want to bankrupt you.
Hey, I got a parking ticket, man, in this town.
Oh, really?
$54.
Yeah.
Wait, were you ready for this? Because I was like 2 inches out of the line.
They got to pay the bills here for, like, the, you know.
Oh, yeah, because West Hollywood's just falling apart without my $53.
I'm sorry about that.
God. I'm going to see if a serious XM will let me expense that.
I'm
going to try to push that through.
I apologize.
But what songs did you play with Oz? You played Crowley?
We played
the whole set?
Not the whole set. It was about, you know, it was maybe four or five Sabbath jams and Bark at the Moon.
Was it just you when you were playing, or was Zach and everybody else out?
No,
there?
It wasn't. There was not. Say it was during. It was the Gus era. It was Gus G era, who's a great guitar player. And it was Ozzy and Friends. So, like, we'd all come out at the end. It was maybe for one of the shows. It was me and Slash and Navarro, I think, you know, who came out for Paranoid at the end. But I'd have my part of the set. You know, Gus would do most of the set. Then I'd come out for a few songs.
So Slash in your part, where you're the sole guitar player, what did you play?
Oh, geez.
You played Mr. Crowley?
Mr. Crowley, Bark at the Moon, NIB, Iron Man. I mean, just like it was like practicing. I'm in my studio in my house practicing these Ozzy and Sabbath songs because I'm going to go play with Ozzy. Friggin' nuts, dude.
And when you went for those solos, like when you went for Mr. Crowley, or Bark at the Moon, which is J.K. Lee, when you approached those solos, was your intent, because I haven't heard you do it, your intent to be completely faithful to him? Or, I mean, because one of the things about your guitar playing, you're a great player, is you're very unique.
That's
when
correct,
you hear Tom Morello, it's Tom Morello.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's I thought when you play those solos, like, the reason why they're having me on the tour is because, not because I play in a Ozzy Osbourne tribute band, you know what I'm saying? So I try to get in the mindset of a J.K. Lee or a Randy Rhodes, but then be myself in that mindset.
So you put some of yourself into those
solos.
Yeah,
but I had to go out there and shred, dude. I had to go out there and, like, I got all that. Like, it doesn't always come through in, you know, the work with Rage and obviously, but when I was practicing 8 hours a day, I was practicing Randy Rhodes solos and scales.
Wow. So I got to see this. So must have video of it.
I think it's on YouTube.
I got to see it. I want to hear how you approach that stuff because I would, as much as you have to stay, you're on sacred ground with those solos. I also would be intrigued to see your interpretation
of
them.
Sure.
I think that's what would make it unique and cool.
You could
go to Guitar Center and find a lot of kids that could play
exactly,
note for note.
Exactly. Though there was one, like, dangerous moment in the in the, it was Voodoo Fest a couple of years ago, Slash and I did the show. And and so the Ozzy was changing the set during the set. So some songs were coming and going. And, you know, we kind of come and the guitar players kind of come and go during the set. So you don't know when you're going to be playing and when you're not. So the one thing that the crew guys say is the one thing he always cuts is "Mama, I'm Coming Home." So it goes from Iron Man, then on the set it says "Mama, I'm Coming Home," then you finish with Paranoid. So we think we're going to rock Iron Man, then we're going to stay out there for Paranoid, right? So we finish Iron Man and getting ready to play, and he just starts going into "Mama, I'm Coming Home." So we're like, I don't know that one. Like, I didn't learn that one, dude. So me and Slash just kind of skulk off stage, and we're sitting like right, but not side stage, but like behind the stage, and we're sitting there, and I'm looking over to the side of the stage, and one of the crew guys is losing. He's like, he's gesturing wildly, and he's mouthing things like he's there's a big problem, and I'm like, I can't hear you. There's a "Mama, I'm Coming Home" is really loud, and he's losing his, he's panicking. And what had happened? Finally, he creeps over to us, because apparently, if you're the crew guys, you can't cross the stage. It's like, it's bad news. Slash and I were sitting on the pyro.
Oh,
we were sitting on the pyro.
Oh,
and in that case,
you should break the rule and crawl across the stage. Exactly. Run!
You're about to blow up Slash and Tom Morello. Like, come across the stage.
Yeah, take the heat from Ozzy and Sharon. Really?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. And it all worked out. We didn't blow up, but
clearly,
there was a moment where we were in danger of blowing up. Yeah.
And the same thing with Slash. I mean, I would his playing style.
Yeah, he's not doing note for note on those Sabbath songs.
Shred stuff either. Yeah. You know,
He's being him.
Yeah, that's what you would want.
Yeah.
And you toured with Springsteen.
Yeah, for about 2 years. I was an ally of the E Street Band.
And, I mean, you were telling me the other day when we were hanging out, is Springsteen just a guy for his age,
yeah,
just in ridiculous shape.
Yeah, he's 68 now, I think. He just had a birthday, so we either just turned 67, 68. And he just takes being able to watch his – I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, but being able to watch his commitment to excellence in every area of life is a very inspiring thing. Because you're playing shows in South Africa, you're playing shows in Des Moines, you're playing shows in Berlin, and sometimes I would see like the same fans at all those shows because people travel everywhere to see this thing. But even that being the case, the person who is most excited to be there that night at that show is Bruce Springsteen. Like, he loves it. And my favorite guitar solo that I've ever played on any stage, any record, is the song "The Ghost of Tom Jones," which I did with Bruce a number of times.
Yeah, which is killer. And I mean, you, same deal. You in the E Street Band, you're doing Tom Morello.
Sure.
What you bring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Was that a risky thing in a band so classic based like the E Street Band?
Well, the good news is, I respect that, but you know, like, first of all, the E Street Band doesn't need me to be great, you know.
who was not in Nils?
Well, no, when I first, it was a Little Steven. He was doing his show Lilyhammer,
right.
And so, first of all, I just jammed with the band a few times. We played "Ghost of Tom Joe," then it would be two or three songs here. Over the course of some years, I would just guest from time to time. Then when Steve was away doing Lilyhammer, I did an Australian tour, and it went so well while we were in Australia. We made a record. We made a Bruce Springsteen record. He was inspired by what was going on. And then just kind of kept going. Steve came back in the band. I just stayed. So I'm very respectful of that material. And it's also, you know, there's a lot of people on stage in that incarnation of the band. So, you know, like, I sort of understand my role is, like, make sure you know the songs. Like, on the last U.S. tour, we did 34 shows, 182 different songs in 34 shows.
My gosh.
So, like, know the songs, and then when Bruce gives you the nod, blow the roof off the place.
Wow. Amazing. And you're still in touch with him. During a commercial break, you thought he was calling.
I'm looking forward to he's on Broadway. I think his Broadway show starts tonight.
Yeah, that's tonight. Like a crazy ticket and run. You're going to go see one?
I would love to, yeah. I don't have plans to right now, but it's going on for like 5 months. So
I have the Dio bowling event is this Friday, which is the reason I'm in LA to host it. And the last couple of years, Tom has bowled with me on my team. And last year we won.
Yes.
And John Five was on the team. And John has a zombie gig, so he can't be there. So I replaced him with Sebastian Bach this year. And as a condition of Sebastian being on the team, he insists that tomorrow night I go to his house and listen to Kiss and other bands, but predominantly Kiss records, on vinyl with him and drink. And he lives...
he drives a hard bargain.
...in the Valley. So he told me it's a deal breaker. If I don't show up and do this at his house, he will not bowl on Friday. So tomorrow, I will be at
Will you be able to stand up on Friday is the question.
The question is, what condition will I be on to do this show Thursday morning day?
Well, maybe that's where you do the MVP week link. You kind of hand it over to the audience. Yeah.
But Tom lives not far from the area we're talking about, where Sebastian is and where the bowling is. So I'm going to try to rope you in to come by as well. Dude, you got to play the German version of The Elder. It's unbelievable on vinyl. It'd be too funny. So anyway, the Dio event is Friday. If you're in Southern California, Pins in Studio City. Great cause. Every penny goes to the Dio Cancer Fund.
It's a super fun night.
And if you're just in the area, you just want to come. But if you want to be on my bowling team, we're doing something different this year. We're auctioning off a spot on my team. And the sixth person on the team, you can be the bowler with us and go to eBay. There's links. If you search my name or Dio Bowling, it'll come up. But you'll see there's an official auction. The high bidder gets to bowl on my team Friday night with Sebastian, with Doug Aldridge, hopefully with Tom if he can make it. And all the money raised in that auction also goes to the Dio Cancer Fund. So go to eBay. I think there's maybe 24 hours left on the auction. I'm really excited because KLOS, the local rock station here in Southern California, who refuses to air my weekly FM syndicated show. I've been fighting with them forever to put it on. It's not a legitimate fight. You know what I'm saying? I'm just pushing the buttons to get it on. They're auctioning off a spot on their team, and my auctions are like nearly double.
Are they at the event?
They're doing a lane.
They're doing a lane.
So they're auctioning off a spot with
that's a very, and you got the competitiveness. I mean, you got to. What the team should do, because I like showbiz, is the two teams should have a wager between each other. And, like, the losing team has to donate X amount of money to the cause.
Maybe next year we'll do that.
Yeah.
I'm just busting chops because I want to push both auctions, obviously, because the money is all for the good cause. So, all right, let's finish up with Tom and a few phone calls from you guys before we have to wrap up here for a Tuesday from Los Angeles. This is Ricky in Maryland. Hey, Ricky. Ricky, been a while. How are you, man?
I'm good, Eddie. How about yourself?
Great. We're short on time here, so we got a lot of calls. Go ahead, man.
Awesome, man. Thank you for taking the call. Hey, Tom. How you doing, brother?
Hey, how are you? What's up?
I'm good. I got to tell you, my condolences, man, to the loss of your brother and bandmate. What an amazing guy that was, man. He was the modern day, everything. Since Jim Morrison, that's how big he was. His music, his life, his glow was totally amazing. And there's not a day, and Eddie will vouch for me, man, there's not a day that his name isn't brought up in my household.
Sure. Yeah. Chris was a great dude and one of the all-time great rockers.
And thank you for being a part of that Audio Slave era, man. You guys made rock and roll stay alive during a time when people were doubting it, man. You guys carried that torch. You were a big part of that.
And
I hope to see and meet you one day, brother.
I look forward to it,
All right, Ricky, thank you. I've said this to Tom before. I'll never forget when that Cochise video came on, shit blowing up and rocking like that. And I was like, wow, this is like, at the time that came out, I was like, yeah, now we got some, this is what I'm talking about. This is Brian in Chicago. Hey, Brian.
How's it going, Eddie? Tom, it's really a pleasure.
What's up,
Tom?
Chicago?
That Soli did at hometown.
Yep.
The Soli did on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yeah, with the the solo. You mean the Bruce Springsteen Ghost of Tom Jones solo Hall of Fame?
Yes. I never saw Bruce actually jam as much as he did along with you, and that solo you did will go down in infamy. I mean, it was incredible. I know.
Oh,
I've
thanks very much.
Other sorts of it, but I don't know. That night, it was just electric. It was just, really something special.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with you. That was one of those things where one plus one equals 75. Like, just something happened on stage that night, and It was pretty. I had actually, you know, this was the this. You saw, it was an HBO special. It was the 25th anniversary of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and you know, most of the performers were people who were in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Not me. I just was like, Bruce asked me to play a song, and I didn't even really know what the event was. He said, "Do you want to play with me at Madison Square Garden?" So I just kind of showed up with my guitar, play Ghost of Tom Joad. I'm looking, oh well, there's Metallica, there's U2, there's, you know, Bruce Springs, there's, you know, Crosby, Stills, Nash. It was like super crazy. But anyway, it was one of my favorite nights, one of my favorite, you know, 7 minutes of music right there.
Thank you, Brian, for the phone call. Speaking of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, this year's nominees are going to be announced. The bands that are then thrown to the voters.
That's correct.
And that's coming out, I think, Thursday.
Something like that. Yeah, the 5th, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. So, and Tom is very active in the Hall of Fame. As I said many times, Tom's the guy who got me to be a voter. And Tom, I mean, the induction speech for Kiss was just absolutely killer.
Well, thanks. You know, I pushed hard for Rush, for Kiss, for Stevie Ray Vaughan, for, you know, every year, just trying to fly the flag.
You're absolutely one of the guys why there has been improvement there for sure. Yeah. So let's say hello to Greg, who's listening to us in Texas. What's up, Greg?
Hey, Eddie, always a pleasure to talk to you. Tom, it's an honor, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. Nice to talk with you, sir. What's up?
Two quick things. Of all the hundreds of concerts I've been to in my life, to this day, the greatest pit I ever witnessed was when you guys in Rage returned the second album in Houston. It was a thing of beauty. So
sure. I remember that show. I remember that show. I remember the Evil Empire show in Houston. I do.
It was crazy.
We've had a lot of good pits, and that was a real good one. I'm glad you survived.
Listen, it was an amazing time. And speaking of amazing, the new Prophets of Rage is, in my opinion, the best release of 2017. So congratulations on that.
Thanks, man. We're having a lot of fun with that.
Well, I wanted to ask real quick, and I know you got some other callers, Eddie, but can you just give me a quick synopsis as to the writing process for the first record, how you and B-Real and Chuck kind of divvied it up?
Sure. It was the most fun and collaborative writing process with a band that I've had since the first Rage record. Everybody came in with a lot of ideas. You know, one day Timmy would come in with some riffs. I'd come in with some the next day. Brad's beats would change the whole thing around. B and Chuck would identify parts that we came up with. Is like, oh, that sounds feels like the chorus to me. It was really like when you first put a band together and you're doing it like for the joy of making music together. There's no expectation other than you want to make a song that you all love.
Well, my thanks to Tom Morello. Hope you guys enjoyed that interview. Always fun talking with Tom, and I'll be seeing Tom this weekend actually in New Orleans at Voodoo Fest. Finally going to get a chance to see his band there, Prophets of Rage. Looking forward to that. Hope you guys enjoyed that conversation. Remember, new episodes every Thursday of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, free, as always, podcastone.com and iTunes. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She is the producer of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I'll see you next week for another all-new episode.
Hey, everybody, it's Shaq. Have you had a chance to check out the number one podcast on Podcast One? That's right, The Big Podcast with Shaq. Me and my co-hosts, John Kincaid and Rob Jenners, we have a blast. With way more than just sports, we have the biggest guests from entertainment to the NBA. I promise you've never, ever heard a show like this. The Big Podcast with Shaq, with a new episode every Monday at podcastone.com.